Saint Vaughan Day. And we're in Rotterdam, Belgium. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 20, Text 6, from Bali Maharaj Surrenders the Universe. Yad yad, dasyati, loke, smin, samparitam, danarikam, tasya, tyage, nimitam, him, vipras, tusyen, na, tena, chet, yad yad dasyati loke smin, samparetam danadikam, tasya chage nimittam kim, viprastusyen na tena chet. This is one of my favorite Bhagavatam verses. This is spoken by Bali Maharaj. He's speaking to Sukra Acharya. So, does everybody know the story about him? Is there anyone who doesn't know the story? Do you need to give a little background? We'll give just a little background then before we read this verse. So, the demigods rule the heavenly planets. And the demigods and the demons are actually half-brothers. They have the same father, different mothers. In those days, there was polygamy. Actually, there was polygamy. There still is polygamy. At least 50,000 people in North America are practicing polygamy. I don't know how many in Europe. At in modern times, people practice a strange kind of polygamy, where they get divorced and get married again, and get divorced and get married again. So they also practice polygamy, just not all at the same time. And the poor ladies are left bereft. They don't even get to have a husband. Or they have a wife and mistresses and so forth. But anyway, then they practice bona fide polygamy, and they actually took care of the women. So Kasyapa had several wives, and one of them had demons for children, and one of them had demigods for children. And the demigods were ruling the heavenly planets, and then one of the demons threw them out and took over the heavenly planets. That was Bali. So the demigods were then homeless. And Aditi was very upset that her children had no home or income. So just like those of us who have children, if our children have no home or income, we're naturally upset. So Aditi was upset, and Kasyapa Muni said, don't worry about it, everything's okay, Krishna's controlling everything, just be peaceful. And Aditi said, sorry, I can't be peaceful. So Kasyapa said, okay, then pray to Krishna. So this is the process. If you can have no material desires honestly, that's great. And if you do have material desires, then be honest about it and pray to Krishna. Krishna, please fulfill this desire in a way that will be pleasing to you and help me advance in your service. So, otherwise, if we have material desires and we don't admit them and pray to Krishna, we will try to fulfill them in another way separate from Krishna. Or else we'll become hard-hearted and strange. So ultimately, we want to be anyabhilasita sunya without material desires. But until that point, we take our material desires. So that's what Kasyapa's wife Aditi did. She took her material desires to Krishna. She performed a tapasya, where for 12 days she drank only milk. And she was saying, which is a big tapasya. May not sound like a big tapasya, but try drinking only milk for 2 or 3 days, and you can see it's a very big tapasya. She was also offering prayers. And she pleased the Lord so much that he showed up in front of her. She offered dandavats. Yes, ladies can offer dandavats. Anyway, she said dandavats. Actually, one of my god sisters, when she came up and just offered regular basis, he probably said, no, offer dandavats. But anyway, so she offered dandavats to Lord Vishnu, and he said, I already know what you want, and don't worry, I'll take care of everything. This is what happens when you take your material desires to the Lord. He fulfills them in some incredible way. So he fulfilled her material desires by becoming her son. And then he tricked the demons. Chalayasi means you tricked. So he came in the form of a little boy, and he came to Bali Maharaj's sacrifice, and he was beautiful. Bali was enchanted by him. And naturally, as a king, he would give the Brahmanas in charity. So he said, what would you like? Brahmana said, I'd like only 3 paces of land. And Bali Maharaj said to him, something very funny. He said, oh, small boy, one who approaches me to beg something should not have to ask anything more anywhere. So that means Bali Maharaj thought that he was God, because only God can give you a benediction, after which you don't need to ask anything of anyone at any time. So therefore, if you wish, you may ask for me as much land as will suffice to maintain you according to your needs. And Vamadeva said, no, you shouldn't be greedy. He said, you should just take the minimum, because if you take more than what you need, you'll never be satisfied. You'll always want more and more and more. It said lust and anger can be pacified temporarily, but greed can never be pacified. He said, don't be greedy. So Bali Maharaj was like, okay, you're pretty dumb. He told him that. He said, you're unintelligent. You don't know what to ask for. After all, you're just a little boy, but okay, fine. If that's what you want, then I'll give it to you. Now, there's also a little side story here, in that the demigods had insulted their guru, Brihaspati. Indra had ignored his guru when he came into the assembly. And it was actually because of that that he was weak enough to be conquered by the demons, whereas Bali had pleased his guru, Sukracharya, and therefore he had the power to conquer the demigods. And the trick was now that Lord Vishnu was going to get Bali to disobey his guru. And by disobeying his guru, see, this is what Krishna does. Krishna has He makes it so that people who follow the laws get the results of the laws. And it doesn't matter whether you're a devotee or a demon or whatever you are. He's very fair. And if you follow the universal laws, you get the result. Now, what happens when an evil person follows the universal laws? Well, then they cause havoc, right? Once they get that power in that position. So Krishna, without violating the laws of the universe, manages to take their stuff away from them prematurely. So he did that with Hiranyakashipu by arranging to have a devotee take birth in his family. Then Hiranyakashipu would offend, because there's another rule that says if you offend a Vaishnava, you wipe out all of your pious friends. And now he's arranging for Bali to disobey his guru, because that's another rule, that if you disobey your guru, you wipe out your pious credits. So this way he stays within the rules. Now, of course, Bali wasn't an evil person at all. Actually, at heart, he was a devotee, but he was acting arrogantly. And anyway, it wasn't his turn. You know, when your children, take your turn, it's not your turn. So it wasn't Bali's turn to be Indra. He had usurped the kingdom of heaven out of turn. He cut in the queue. And so Lord Vishnu was saying, hey, you get to be king of heaven in another manvantara, but this is this Indra's turn, so you've got to give him back, you know. Right? Parents do that? That's your brother's turn, give it back. So that's exactly what Mahamudeva was doing. So he appears in Sukracharya, figures out that this is Vishnu, and he says to Bali, if you give him 3 steps according to his measurement, he'll take everything. He said, actually, he can take everything in 2 steps, and you're going to be in a lot of trouble. So Bali Maharaj has several arguments. First of all, he's already fallen completely in love with Mahamudeva, and he doesn't really care anymore. You know, when one is in love, one doesn't care. Like, I have a friend who's looking to get married, and he has no money. I mean, no money. He's living on the dole, and he's in debt. And I said, Prabhu, don't you think that you should get a job first before you look for a wife? I mean, he's looking for a job. But I said, before you even look for a wife, don't you think you should get a job? And he said, you know, if a girl falls in love with me, she won't care that I'm poor. He said, isn't that right? And I said, well, yeah, that is right. He defeated me. So when one falls, of course, when one becomes mad and material lover, one may be sorry afterwards. But when one falls in love with Krishna, one is not sorry. So Bali Maharaj had fallen in love with Mahamudeva. And he also said, you know, according to the Shastra, I have to keep my promise. The verse right before this, he said, I don't fear anything as much as offending a brahmana. I don't fear poverty, disease, or anything like that. And now he's going to say this really amazing verse. And we know that Bali Maharaj is the epitome of what of the 9 processes? Abhinivedana, complete surrender. So this is going to be a verse about surrender. So anybody who doesn't want to know about surrender, you can be. My Lord, you cannot, my Lord is talking to Sukracharya, his guru. You can also see that all the material opulences of this world are certainly separated from their possessor at death. Therefore, if the Brahmana Vamandeva is not satisfied with whatever gifts one is given, why not please him with the riches one is destined to lose at death? So what's Bali Maharaj's point here? What's he saying?
It's all going to be gone anyway. It's not his anyway. It's going to be taken, so why not give it?
Why not give it, yes. Purport. The word vipra means brahmana, and at the same time, confidential. Bali Maharaj had confidentially decided to give the gift to Lord Vamadeva without discussion, but because such a decision would hurt the hearts of the asuras and the spiritual master, Sukracharya, he spoke equivocally. Bali Maharaj, as a pure devotee, had already decided to give all the land to Lord Vishnu. Here we see that Bali is polite. Right? He doesn't want to hurt anyone's feeling. Now, as the story goes on here, and then we'll come back and speak about this verse. So then Vamadeva expands his body, and he does cover the whole universe in 2 steps. And then he tells Bali, okay, you gave me 3 steps, where do I put the 3rd? And Bali doesn't know what to say. He says, you know, you've broken your promise, now you're going to have to suffer. Not only by taking away everything, you're going to have to suffer for breaking your promise. We need to be punished. And Bali's soldiers come to fight with Vamadeva, and I think Vamadeva kills some of them, and Bali says, no, don't fight anymore. This is not our time. Bali could understand that since he had disobeyed his guru, that he would not be victorious. And his guru cursed him. He said, you will lose all of your arguments. Even Lord Brahma was speaking to Vamadeva and saying, don't punish him so harshly. And Bali's wife was so disturbed that she just rushes in and interrupts Lord Brahma. And she's saying, you know, yes, he should be punished because he didn't fulfill his promise. And Prahlad Maharaj comes and asks Vamadeva to be merciful to his grandson, Bali Maharaj. And finally, Bali Maharaj says, my lord, I think the possessor of riches is separate from the riches that they possess and is worth as much as the riches. So I've given you all of my riches. Now I'm going to give you myself. You can put your third step on my head. And at that point, Vamadeva said, you know, look, it's Indra's turn. You've got to give it back his turn, but you can be Indra later. And in the meantime, I'm going to give you one of the lower heavenly planets, which is actually more opulent than Indra's heaven. And I'll stay there with you perpetually as your doorkeeper. Now, some people say that was to keep Bali from causing any more mischief. It was to keep him in. Okay, nice. So he's making this point here, which is very important for all of us. And that is, we're going to lose everything at death anyway. Why not give it to Krishna now? So we were speaking yesterday about how everything we have, we're going to lose at death or before, right? We're subject to lose everything at any moment. We don't even have to die. We can just have a stroke, you know, or a car accident, or some disease. I mean, I recently read a story of a woman who was cleaning her house. Some termites had eaten the wood, and there was sawdust on the floor. And as she was cleaning, some of the sawdust got into her eyes. So she immediately went to the sink, and she washed her eyes with water like you're supposed to do. And her eyes were still hurting, and she thought, oh, just get some sleep. And when she woke up, she was blind. And it turned out she had an infection in her eyes. The infection went to the optic nerve and burned down her optic nerve. And although she went to the top specialist hospital in America and had four surgeries, she became blind just from cleaning some sawdust on the floor. So this kind of thing happens. You know, sometimes it even happens to people that we know. Right? You know, there's another story I heard about a man whose wife was out shopping with her, I think, five children. And some drunk driver went in the car and killed all the children. You want to go. And these things happen. If there's a tsunami, you know, and comes and wipes out your whole family and your business and your house in 30 seconds. So even before death, we are subject to lose everything at every moment by force. By force. And this is hanging over our head. Dukalayam shastratam. So people say, well, the material world's not so bad. You know, there's some pleasure here. Okay, granted, there's some pleasure. By Krishna's grace, there's some pleasure. Rasamam apsukantya. Krishna says he's the taste in water. By the way, you can analyze that all of our pleasures are dependent on liquid. Suppose you had no liquid in your eyes. Could you be able to enjoy seeing anything? Suppose you had no mucus lining in your nose, could you smell me? Suppose your skin was all dried out, could you enjoy a sense of touch? And try drying your tongue. We used to do this in primary school. You dry your tongue with a paper towel and then put on some salt, sugar, you can't taste it. So all enjoyment is dependent on this liquid, which is Krishna. So actually all of our pleasures are coming from Krishna. They actually are Krishna. Therefore there is some pleasure even in this world. But the pleasure in this world, which we try to take separately from Krishna, with the mentality of our being the enjoyer, is a shastakam. It's temporary, and therefore it cannot be real pleasure. It cannot be real pleasure. Right? Just like I recently, I really wanted a certain kind of jacket. I was looking for a year for a certain kind of jacket, and I was visiting some devotee friends. We stopped in the mall to get some other stuff, and I said, oh, that's exactly what I want. And I got it, and then I found out that anything that falls on it stains it. Now I don't like it anymore. Now I'm going to throw it away. It's all karma stains. I don't know where they came from. You get a new car and you really, you're enjoying it. It doesn't even have to get crashed. It just starts to get some scratches, right, and some breaks in the upholstery. And then you're not even getting much pleasure out of it anymore, right? You don't even have to lose the thing. It just gets old. Or it gets ruined or something. And what's the pleasure in it? So I could learn to soon have breakfast. So let's say that standing behind each one of us was a police officer saying, I have a warrant for your arrest. When are you going to arrest me, sir? Do I have time to eat breakfast? Well, as soon as I get a call on my mobile, I'm going to take you into the office. Whether you finished your breakfast or not, I'm just waiting for the call. You know, you can start eating, but I'm not sure when I'm going to interrupt you. How much would you be able to enjoy the meal? Not sure what to eat first, you know? Do I eat the gluten first? Or save it for last? And all the time you're eating, you're like, when's this police officer going to cart me away? So all of our material enjoyment is like that. First of all, it's not very satisfying while you're so-called enjoying it. And second of all, there's some police officer standing behind you, and you know he's going to take it away. You just don't know when and how. There's no if. There's not an if. There's a when and how. And that's also scary, right? You don't know how it's going to happen. So what my mother said, my mother had a very nice philosophy, which was very similar to Bali Maharaj's philosophy. She said, better to give things with a warm hand than a cold hand. You understand that? Mm-hmm. Better to give things with a warm hand than a cold hand. So if you give your inheritance to your children after you're dead, you get any satisfaction from that? What happiness do we get from giving somebody something is we get to see them enjoy it. There's a reciprocation of love, right? So if I give you something while I'm alive, then I get to have pleasure from the relationship. If it goes to you after I'm dead, I don't get any pleasure out of it. And in the same way, if we give everything to Krishna voluntarily, we enjoy. And if Krishna takes everything by force, we suffer. That's it. That's it. It's already his. It never belonged to us. And he's definitely going to take it back. Definitely, absolutely, for sure. By the way, why is he going to do that? Is he mean? Why does he do that? Why does he take everything away? Could be. Yes?
You cannot take it with us.
Why not? Why didn't Krishna make the material world so that whatever you can get to keep, like happens in the spiritual world? Why did he instead take it away?
Because he wants to give something better.
Wants to give you something better? Well, for materialistic people, they don't get anything better than something. Yeah?
It's not a natural position. It's not the natural.
That's true, but why is it temporary? If it's not natural, it would be miserable, but why is it temporary?
Because if you would enjoy it for eternity, we would be God. But we can have people.
We can enjoy in the spiritual world eternally. And we're not God. Everything we have in the spiritual world, we get to keep eternal. Yeah.
Krishna says, I'm the source of knowledge, memory, and forgetfulness. We don't keep stirring over. Somebody asked Srila Prabhupada, a reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, why are there young people in your temples? And he said, why are there young people at your university? She said, well, that's the time for learning. That's the age for learning. He said, that's why young people are in our movement. So you have to keep starting over. Otherwise, you have no chance to forget the bad materialistic habits you've formed.
To get a chance to start the spiritual path. Of course, we do remember. We don't remember the events. But we do remember our impressions from other lives. We do keep our impressions. We do keep the lessons. Just like I don't remember much of learning how to read, very, very little, but I do know still know how to read. So although I don't remember the details of all of my past lives, I remember the details of some. But although I don't remember the details of all my past lives, the impression that those experiences made do remain with me, and they do form the kind of person I am. But I think you're getting very close to the answer I'm looking at, although all of you gave wonderful answers. Why do we start over again? Because we have what? Why do we keep getting different bodies in different situations? We have what?
Desires.
We have desires. Whose fault is that? That's not Krishna's fault, is it? Who in here has a material desire that is impossible to fulfill in the present body? That's what it's like. Because we have material desires that can't be we can't possibly fulfill all of our desires in any one body. You know, nowadays when people think that they're the body, you've got some people cutting up their bodies and trying to change genders that way. It doesn't work like that. There are people who change genders in the Shastra, but they don't do it with knives and chemicals. They do it through mystic power. But why are they doing that? They're saying, no, I can't fulfill my desires in a male body. I want to get a female body. Why do people dye their hair? I can't get my desires fulfilled with, you know, brown hair. I need to have red hair. Right? Is it? Why do people get plastic surgery? Why do people wear clothes that make their bodies look different than they actually are? That means they have a desire for another kind of body. And we need to forget, because otherwise it would be really disturbing. Just like if you're doing a role on stage, if you're remembering all your past roles, you wouldn't be able to act, you wouldn't be able to get into the part. Right? You have to forget who you are, you have to forget all the different roles that you play in order to really get into the part of that character. So the reason everything is taken away is that we have various desires, and we have to earn the right to fulfill our desires. And sometimes our karma points run out. Not my karma points run out. I have my certain karmic debt. I have a desire. I work to fulfill that desire. And I get to have that desire for as long as I have the karma to pay for it. And then I have some karma to pay for another desire. So now I get another situation. And that's why everything is temporary. Because we want all kinds of different things that are all contradictory. Right? Don't we? Yes. Okay. So that's why it's temporary. Whose fault is that? Ours. It's our fault. And it's not Krishna's cruelty that the material world is a nasty place. It's his kindness that he's given us a world where we can, you know, do all these things. And he's telling us that having material desires that forced you into one temporary situation after another is going to be pretty miserable. But if you want to do it, here you go. He could leave us asleep eternally in Mahavishnu. Instead, he creates a world of illusion. So therefore, it's all temporary. Therefore, we're going to lose everything. And the fact that everything's temporary makes all of material life extremely painful. Because we're not only losing all of our possessions, we're even losing our identity. Our present identity is what? Our memories. What's one of the scariest things? Is losing your mind, right? Losing your memory. I mean, what are we more afraid of? Being a quadriplegic and poor or having Alzheimer's? I think we're much more afraid of losing our memory. Why? Because that's our identity. If I can't remember my experiences, I can't remember my family, where I grew up, where I went to school, what I did, then I'm gone. Who am I? Our identity is tied to this body and this life. All of our concepts of our ability to enjoy are tied to that. So we're in a constant state of fear because we are going to lose that. Why? Because we want other identities. So we're wanting things, dukkha yogi, The material desires are the birth of our misery. We're always in a state of fear. And not only are we always fearful, we're also always angry. Or some mild form of anger like annoyance, frustration, irritation. Because things don't go the way we want, and we're always in danger of losing everything, and we will lose everything, we're just not quite sure when and how. So Abhinaya Maharaj here is intelligent. He says, you know, you might as well give it up in a way that will make you happy. You gotta do it anyway. Why not do it in a way that will give you pleasure? So that means all of the possessions here, he specifically Dan Adikam. Dan means wealth, Adi and so on. All of our possessions. And even he gave his body. And the devotee also surrenders his false identity, his ahankar. As Advaitacharya says, Chaitanya Radhasamui, Chaitanya Radhas, Chaitanya Radhasamui, Dasya Radhasya Radhasa. I am just a servant of Lord Chaitanya. I'm not any Sarvapati Vinimutam. I even give up my identity, my material identity. You don't use it in Krishna's service. So what does giving up mean? What does it mean to surrender? Well, first of all, surrender isn't like waving the white flag, you know. I surrender. Like in World War II, the Allies told the Japanese, has to be an unconditional surrender. And they only did it because they were bombed. You know. But that's not the kind of surrender. It's the kind of surrender of the husband and wife in the wedding ceremony. You know, till death do us part, and sickness and health, and poverty and riches. It's that kind of surrender. You never really know what you're getting into when you have a wedding ceremony, do you? You don't know. Your spouse may be hit by a car the next day. Right? Yeah. You're surrendering. Or having a baby. You don't know what that baby means. Right? It's going to be a healthy baby or a handicapped baby, or you're going to like the kid, or they're going to like you. You don't know. It's a lottery. It's a surrender. But it's a surrender of love. It's not a surrender of war, it's a surrender of love. It's that kind of surrender. It's Krishna, I see that everything belongs to you. So I want to acknowledge that in a loving way. I want to acknowledge that with gratitude and love, not by force. And by the way, Krishna gets very happy when you do that. Because that was what he wanted from the beginning anyway. And what does it mean to surrender everything to Krishna? Does it mean literally that you have nothing? Maybe, sometimes. It might mean that. That you take something and you physically give it away and you don't have it anymore. But we do find that even when that's done, like Balimars gave everything away, and well, interestingly enough, he got it all back many times over. He got to be more opulent than Indra then, and he got to be Indra later. Now, one of the devotees was just telling me how she gave everything away. Before she gave everything to Krishna, she got everything back. But usually you have to give everything away first. Krishna doesn't usually do it that way. I had this experience recently in New Zealand. Jayapitaka Maharaj was there. He was traveling with two assistants. And he said, one of my assistants has come to video and he's paid for by the Malaysia temple, but my other assistant is just traveling with me. And some temples pay for traveling preachers and some don't. And I was sitting in the audience thinking, yeah, I understand what he's talking about. And I felt moved, and I thought, I should give him some donation. And part of me was saying, I'm sure he doesn't need any donation, but I felt moved, so, you know, I gave him $50, and the next day somebody gave me $550. I thought, that's a good investment policy. Just give your money to the sadhus, and you get it back the next day 10 times over. My point is that Krishna gives back. We find this happen over and over and over and over. Prabhupada talked about this, how he left his children. He said, but now I have thousands of children. And he said that they're taking much better care of me than my own children. So we do find that when we surrender to Krishna lovingly. Now, my dear friends, don't surrender to Krishna grudgingly. That's not what Krishna's interested in. And when Krishna describes charity in the modes of nature, charity in the mode of passion, you're still giving to a worthy person, but you're doing it grudgingly. Maybe someone else asked you to do it, you're feeling obligated, Prabhupada says, and later on you regret it. Why did I give so much? This happens in the Hare Krishna movement. Somebody surrenders, and then later they said, I invited him in the ashram, and I left my education, and I left my job, and I gave so much, and now I don't have anything. That's charity in the mode of passion. So that doesn't just mean giving money, but giving of your time, giving of yourself. Please make sure that you're doing it from the heart. Please make sure you're doing it from the heart. That what we give, we want to give. Because Krishna is so nice. Because we want to have that relationship with him. So first of all, you will get back, and ultimately you get back everything, because then we go to the spiritual world where we have unlimited opulence forever. And something that doesn't change. And also one becomes fully satisfied. One gets real happiness. Because the real happiness we're looking for in our body, in our possessions, in our mind, in our identity, and all this stuff, is really our relationship with Krishna. We're really looking for Krishna. So when we get Krishna, we have everything we want through having all those other things. Like, why do you have money? Why do you have money? What does money give us that's even more important than the money itself? Why do we have money? For what purpose? Yes?
The idea or illusion of choice.
Okay, that works. When you have money, you have more freedom, don't you? Definitely. Definitely you have more freedom if you want. What else?
This really means to fulfill your desires.
You can get pleasure. You can fulfill your desires. Okay. So pleasure, freedom, what?
Security.
Pleasure, freedom, security, probably a few other things.
Opportunities?
Opportunities, that's probably very much like freedom.
Power.
Power. Power. Okay, yeah, definitely power. Status. Huh? Gives you a position in a community. So you get community, power, choice, freedom, security, pleasure. Okay. Let's say that we're pure devotees. Do we have freedom? Liberated means free. Pure devotees, Prabhupada said, they can go wherever they want and do whatever they want. Do you have choice if you're pure devotee? Yeah, you can do whatever you want. Do you have power? Yeah. This is one nice little book that says that if you want real power, you become a devotee. Your devotee is more powerful than Lord Brahma who can create a universe. Okay? What about community? Do you get a community? Is there a community in Goloka Vrindavan? And do you have some status in that community? Do you have a position? Do you have some role, some service? What about security? Nahani te hani mani shriya. If you know Krishna, do you have security? Yeah, you can find out you can't be killed, you can't be hurt. So everything that we want through wanting to get money, we can actually have in Krishna. Therefore, when I establish a relationship with Krishna, I get all everything fulfilled, which is the reason for which I want everything in this world. So how do you lose? And you get it fulfilled in a much better way. I mean, how much security does money give you after all? I know they call it securities, right? You invest your money. All you need to have is a war. Or some economic collapse. You know, the dollar, American dollars I have just keep going down in value. Right? What kind of security is that? Maybe the Chinese will take over America and my dollars won't be worth anything. So that's the understanding of Bali. And surrender, again, doesn't necessarily mean that you get rid of it. But it means you do what? You offer it to Krishna. Now that may mean that you don't physically have it, it's not beginning. Or it may just mean that you still have it, but you. You use it for Krishna. You acknowledge what was already there, that the thing belonged to Krishna, was connected with Krishna. You acknowledge that. Then you're not in Maya anymore. Maya means when you take something separate from Krishna. This false identity I have, I'll use it for Krishna. It's just a drama, but I'll do the drama for Krishna. Like one of the Odi here was telling me, I can carry your suitcase because I'm German and I'm strong. And I said, well, what are Americans? And the devotee said, what was it? Loud and confident. So I said, okay, I'm going to be loud and confident for Krishna. I do something with it. So your false identity, your body, your inclinations, your wealth, use it for Krishna. Belongs to you then. That's surrender. Surrender isn't just like an impersonalist, you know, you have to, like the Jains, just walk around naked, you know, now it's surrender. It belongs to Krishna. They do that, you know. That's their idea of Abhinivedana. They literally have, of course, they still have their body. They'll take off their body. And they still have their ankara. Therefore, Abhisuddha-Buddhya, they're not actually liberated. But real liberation, real freedom, is I give everything to Krishna. And then there's something interesting happens. If I've already given everything to Krishna, all my possessions, all my talents, my body, manasadeya, and deha, that means I already died. Everything. Right? That's what death means. Death means I lose everything. So if I do it voluntarily, I've already died. Now if I've already died, can I be afraid of death? I'm already dead. Therefore, one who's given everything to Krishna has nothing to fear. There's no more fear. My body is not nervous. Sorry, Krishna's. I already gave it away. If I weren't given away, what's the meaning of it if it's going to be taken away? And then it's funny, you know, when you give it to Krishna, usually you still get to enjoy it. Isn't that interesting? But you start to enjoy it spiritually, in relationship with Krishna. Krishna's not really interested in having us be poverty stricken. I mean, sometimes he takes that kind of measure in extreme cases. Like very sick people sometimes have to be, you know, my mother-in-law was recently very sick and she wasn't allowed, they didn't allow her to eat for 5 days. So sometimes if you're very sick, Krishna may make you externally poverty stricken, but that's not his desire. His desire is to let you have things and enjoy them with him. So that is full surrender, and that will actually make us happy. So that is Bhani Maharaj's lesson. My Lord, you can also see that all the material opulences of this world are certainly separated from their possessor at death. Therefore, if the Brahman Vamadeva is not satisfied by whatever gifts one is given, why not please him with the riches one is destined to lose at death? So questions, comments, corrections, chastisements, additions, subtractions.
Or other situations in this life would be also.
Yeah. But let's say if we take the example of Ivani Kashyapu. So he didn't, I mean he came to a position where he wanted to enjoy that eternity. He wanted to be eternal. So it's not, you know, as I disagree.
You disagree. You think somebody can have a desire that can be fully fulfilled in that body?
No, I disagree that everything is temporary, not, I mean, it could be because we have more desires, but also because of the fact that if it wasn't temporary, then we would, you know, then we would be the enjoyer.
But we have our position eternally in the spiritual world, we're not God.
Yeah, but as enjoyed, we're as servants, we're being enjoyed.
But we're also enjoying as the enjoyed.
Yeah.
It's not that the enjoyed are not enjoying, they are enjoying. And sometimes it says the devotee is enjoying more than Krishna, which is why Krishna becomes Lord Chaitanya, to be a devotee.
Yeah, okay.
So to be in a position of eternal enjoyment, practically on the level of God, does not make you God.
Yeah, but that's why he makes it temporary, so we can understand.
No, no, let's just say theoretically, that you're trying to enjoy this world according to the rules.
Yeah.
Okay? You're following the rules.
Mm-hmm.
You can take birth on the heavenly planets again and again and again and again.
But not eternally.
Why not?
You have to cool down. When your karma runs out,
you can continue your pious activities. Most people don't, but you can.
But yeah, but you have to cool down. No matter the fact that you cool down from the heavens.
You could stay there if you kept doing pious activities.
You can do pious activities in the heavenly planet?
Of course, most people don't. Most people go to Hawaii and spend their money. They don't make money. But you could.
I suppose then you do tapasya all your life and you don't get to enjoy, isn't it? If you do pious activities.
The residents of the higher planets, like Tapaloka, Jhanaloka, Maraloka, they're always engaged in tapasya and they're enjoying much, 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 much more than the devas on the in Swargaloka. Their pleasures are much higher. But you could do that. There's no rule that you have to fall down from those planets. The general circumstances that you do. But it's not a rule.
So you're saying it's temporary because we want other things?
We want other things, and we engage in activities whereby we lose our right to enjoy certain circumstances also.
Because
it's not just our desires, it's we have to earn our desires here. In the spiritual world, you don't have to earn your desires. It's just an exchange of love. But here, because our mood is not loving, therefore, okay, because the things we want are not very good, therefore we have to earn them. We have to earn them through a process of following the scriptural rules, which is supposed to purify our desires, so that when we get the thing, we use it properly. And that doesn't always happen. So people often follow the rules to get something, and then when they get something, they say, oh, I've got it now, I'll use it for exploitation. But in theory, one could follow the rules and stay in a position in which you'll enjoy it further. I mean, if there's bhutra paliyate, you have to go into the body of Mahavishnu because periodically the Prabhupada says the Lord just gets completely disgusted with the fact that people aren't becoming spiritually awake. And just says, oh, close the whole show. But then again, he comes back. So you could. There's nothing intrinsically to prevent you from doing that. Krishna hasn't rigged things.
Well, he does do it.
Rigged things to be nasty to teachers. It's
not
like that. Not like that. Just like in a dance performance. I mean, you could say that. That's from one perspective, but it's not exactly correct. Like in a dance performance, suppose that one of the dancers decides that they want to do something out of step. What will happen? They'll bump into other people. And they may even fall off the stage. So there's a dance going on. In the chapter on Maslila, Prabhupada says the whole world is full of Krishna singing. And he says everything is also full of Krishna's dancing, but different living entities are responding differently to that. There's a harmony everywhere. If you study science, you'll find that there's a harmony of numbers. What do they call Fibonacci numbers? There's repeating numbers. I don't remember. It's named after some Italian discovery. But there's a harmony in nature. And everything's vibrating also. Everything's moving. Vibration means sound. And that sound is originally Hare Krishna. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there's nothing except the name of the 14 worlds, he actually means that literally. Everything is just Hare Krishna. Everything. The whole material world is created by sound. Which is quite like the earthly known. And if we're acting in harmony with it, if we're dancing in time with the dance, then we're in spiritual consciousness. But if I decide I want to do my own dance, then I start coming in conflict. I'm coming in conflict then with nature. I'm coming in conflict with other living entities. And I'm coming in conflict with my very self. And with my body and mind. Therefore, you know, I've never done the body kind of work. I'm the one who's dancing upstairs. You could say, Krishna arranged things so the people who dance out of step suffer. You know, okay, but that's... I mean, what he has arranged is if you want to dance out of step, you can have a world of illusion. That's really nice. I mean, of course, that removes the difficulty from the people in the spiritual world. They don't have to put up with them. But it's also we get to imagine that we are dancing in harmony and that we are the center and that we are the enjoyment of such pretty. That's pretty kind of me. He really didn't have to do that. That's his mercy. So even for a conditioned soul, there's ways of behaving that are closer and closer and closer. The closer you get to being in harmony with Krishna, the happier you are in the world. And the further you get, the more you suffer. If you get far away, your suffering is a mode of your enjoyment is a mode of ignorance enjoyment, which is my enjoyment is just see how wicked I am. There's no taste in the thing anymore. There's just a pleasure from being rebellious. And the closer, and the laws of the scriptures bring you closer and closer and closer. The closer you get, the more you feel happiness. And you could take birth. Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, for you can take birth and motive it is worth after birth after birth. It probably won't happen. Why? Because someone in the mode of goodness is, because it's not pure goodness, they're subject to what? What particularly are people in the mode of goodness subject to? And in pride, they may end up doing something sinful. Happens all the time. They have a sense of freedom, they have a sense of invulnerability, because they are. They're relatively free from sinful reactions. Relatively invulnerable. Real goodness. So that tendency is very, very strong. But you could theoretically. It's not really. So if you're only cutting through and following the rules, yeah, he could. At least for the duration of the universe. Lord Brahma gets to do that. He's a jiva. Lord Brahma gets to be the controller for the whole thing of the universe. So you can do it. That option is there. It's not. You can't. But the problem is that the material enjoyment is not. Even if you get to enjoy it for a very, very long time, or even if you keep getting taking birth in some material ultimate position over and over and over again, the material happiness is not very satisfying. So I was focusing on the temporary bit of Dukkhalaya and Shashvatam. But even if you get to have it for a gazillion years, it doesn't touch the soul. It's kind of like looking at a picture of yourself smiling. It's just mental concoction. It's not, you're not actually experiencing it. It's you're not having that experience. It's like reading a book or somebody else is having it. You know, it's not the experience of yours. Is that all right? Okay, wait, I could take one more. Yes, please.
Actually, two questions.
Uh-oh. May have to move. Unless I can answer it in 2 seconds. I'll try for a 2-second answer.
In the beginning you mentioned that Sahita is like, you get an example of reading. In the reading, you surrender.
Yes, yes.
So, I was thinking what's the difference between doing things with faith and to surrender.
Well, when you get married or have kids, it's really kind of a blind thing, isn't it? You never really know what you're getting into, even if you have good astrologers. You know, there's love, so you surrender. But with Krishna, you know what you're getting. So how do you have that faith? Well, Krishna tells Arjuna, many, many people in the past. You study the people who surrendered. Find people in the Hare Krishna movement who surrendered a little bit more than you. Ask them what it's like. See, are they happy? Find people in Hare Krishna movement who surrender a lot more than you. And ask them. Real surrender. I'm not talking about grudging stuff. I'm not talking about hard-hearted, grudging stuff that someone's doing for status. I'm not talking about that kind of thing. I'm talking about actual surrender. See, are they happy? And you can always experiment. I just said this in Hungary, I'll say it again here. Make an experiment. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's suggestion, and this is appearance day tomorrow, so this is appropriate. So today's Namadev's appearance day, tomorrow's Bhaktivinoda's appearance day, today's also the appearance of his appearance of Jiva Goswami. Then the next day is the disappearance of Haridasa Thakur. Okay, so you've got 3 days, Namadev's and Jiva Goswami, Bhaktivinoda, and Haridasa Thakur. Why don't you pick something? Of course, after I said this in Hungary, Krishna made me do this too. So, why? It's a problem with preaching. Why don't you pick something? This is my suggestion for everybody. Pick something that you know you should surrender, that you haven't. Something that you know, something you want to surrender, and you haven't done. It can be a very little thing that you're not taking too much of a risk, and you can always take it back again. Okay? That's not entirely true. But anyway, not too much. Just try for 3 days. Today, tomorrow, and the next day. Pick something and go to the deities and say, for the next 3 days, I'm going to give this to you. I'm going to surrender. See what happens. Try it. Don't be blind. Try it. And if it works out well, then surrender for a month. And if that works out well, then you can surrender for 3 months. And then you can do for another 3 months. And another 3 months. And pretty soon you'll forget when your surrender time is over and you'll just keep doing the thing. And you'll say, "That's pretty nice, I like this life." So try making this permanent. Actually do it. Not like, okay, I'm going to do it, so that's. You know, and you're half holding on to it, you know, not like, okay, Krishna. I should surrender. Good. Okay. Protect your other one. Experience it. You'll feel happy and free and light. You'll feel like dancing. You're like, wow, that's nice. I can also surrender something more. Okay? Okay, we're now ready. 9 o'clock.
Dr. Thakur says, Navina Kitchen, Chaudhar Manimaj, you mentioned that how the sound is the cause of creation. But we also heard that the sound is the cause of bondage.
Yes.
And sound only is the cause of liberation.
Yes.
The sound, which is cause of creation, is it a material sound or spiritual sound?
Spiritual. That is a 2-hour seminar, which was given, actually it was given here as a 10 or 12 hour seminar. Mm-hmm. This is a very holy spot by Bhakti Vijayan Maharaj from Anubhuti Sakta. And you can still find it on the iskcon.com website under education audio. And if you like, I will even give you the handouts. And I have distilled this about 12 hours down to about 1.5 hours. And I also teach that. How is the gross cosmos created by sound? How is our particular entanglement created by sound? And how is it reversed by sound? And we now have to end, or I'm in a lot of trouble. But I do suggest that you, if you're interested in that topic, his seminar is rather academic. But it's just absolutely wonderful. You may have to listen to it 2 or 3 times. But it is worth it. So iskcon.com. Education audio on a Riti subject by Bhaktivinoda. All right? And we can, if you like, I can even give you the papers and you can study the slogans. Fascinating. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Gali Maharaj. All glories to Gandhi. Jai Sri Ramayana. Jai Sri Ramayana. Jai Sri Ramayana.